Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, Hail Varsity Radio Roadshow Wednesday. We are down here at the home offices of Hail Varsity in the rail yard, high above the rail yard. We are in the conference room, made just a beautiful setup here, and we are so loaded up today. Great midweek show. Mike Babcock going to be with us. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey. I can wave at him in his cubicle. He's not waving back. And Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network, will join us. But we are kicking off with Dan Napoli, an incredible filmmaker, writer, director, and just an awesome force behind a beautiful film that is out, 50 Summers. Dan, you are incredible with your work, your passion for baseball, and you're rocking Roberto Clemente today. How are you?
I'm good. I think I can go home now, right? I think we're done. Yeah, a little Rue to Fight action going on. Thanks for having me on, man. This is very, very cool. Very appreciative.
Well, thank you for spending time. And what we want you to do is check out 50 Summers. Can find it on Twitter at 50 Summers Film. Can also follow at Herdat Films. And when we talk about 50 Summers, Dan, give us a little backdrop, your passion, your love of sports, and kind of give folks a behind-the-curtain view of this project.
Oh, man. All right.
It's a lot of questions.
Yeah. It'll keep it tight. Sorry. So I've been in Nebraska since 94. I've been in Omaha since 2006. I grew up in Denver, played baseball, was a baseball guy. My dad was a Brooklyn Dodger guy. I was originally born in Brooklyn, but, you know, moved when we were tiny. My dad's old enough that, like, you know, he was there and got the day off of school when they won in 55.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's such a cool story to hear. But so baseball was always a thing. I got a scholarship to go play at Nebraska Kearney. Wasn't great, but, like, when you're a left-handed off-speed pitcher, like, people give you extra lives.
You are a crafty, crafty lefty.
1,000,000%, dude. I can show you the elbow surgery scar. Everybody see that on the radio?
No, I'm not laughing at the unfortunate surgery, but I am. You crafty lefties, man.
Oh, dude, that's the
way
it goes.
Paint me outside black.
Yep, it's always the way it goes. So I had was a journalism major, went to journalism school. Always loved sport. Always loved film, music, video. As a typical quintessential Gen X guy raised on MTV,
sure.
And the pure art going on in music videos in the early 90s, Spike Jones, Fincher, Mark Romanek, all that kind of stuff like that kind of influenced me, get in that way. I had my own production company for about 12 years, worked a lot in extreme sports, also kind of grew up in that world of skateboarding and punk rock music, which film is like, that's how that was in the 80s and 90s of skateboard company. Everybody's putting out a video every year. You kind of just kind of get in that groove. So those are the kind of things that got me going into what I've been doing. I've directed about a dozen and a half documentaries at this point, mostly extreme sports. Where 50 Summers comes in, and which is really cool, is where I cross with our producer, Bill Hipsher. Mm-hmm. I actually think Bill is in LA right now working on some development for us on some of our next projects. So bring it home, Bill. But Bill is a lifelong Omaha native.
Yes.
Millard guy, Omaha Royals guy. And so what basically happened is, as I came on board and he kind of started up, Herdat Films. We were continuing to do some of the extreme sports documentaries, and, he was very interested in doing some other stuff. My skill set was getting like a little bit better, and was fortunate enough that he thought it was decent enough to start biting off some bigger stuff. And Omaha was coming up on 50 years, the 50th anniversary of being affiliated with the Royals. Mm-hmm. Longest affiliation in AAA, second longest affiliation in the minors. And so, you know, the idea for the film, to do a film, was really Bill's, was really our producer. And he really, you know, he's like, there's something here. There's really something interesting here. There's really something interesting in the minor leagues that I just don't think is getting a story that's just not really getting told. And so, you know, as a director, that kind of starts to land on my desk, as to be like, okay, yeah, let's approach this and let's tell the story. Let's make something out of this.
Dan Napoli's with us, and 50 Summers, incredible documentary about the Royals, about minor league baseball, at 50 Summers Film is where you can follow that on Twitter. Get to iTunes. You'll love it. Promise you that. Download it, purchase it, and enjoy. You can also follow Dan on Twitter at ETVDan is where you do that. Here is a bit of a sample. And this, Elijah, crank this up. This is the trailer audio from 50 Summers. We're just around the corner. Of course, Husker baseball's rocking now. They're getting ready for Arizona State. But soon, it will be 50 at least, and sunny. It'll be baseball time again, but enjoy this little snippet of 50 Summers.
Dads bring their sons to the ballpark. That's where it all starts.
And everybody has a good time. I mean, who goes to a ballpark and doesn't have a good time?
The history of minor league baseball naming pretty much goes back to the Civil War. It wasn't about two wacky team names. It was about the heart and soul of what it meant to be from Grand Rapids, and the heart and soul of what it meant to be from Wheeling.
I think we always had a heart. I think the heart was Rosenblatt Stadium. I think we now have a soul.
If you start with Kansas City, they were a remarkably well-run expansion franchise.
Started there in 1973 and got called up to the big leagues, I think, in August.
What happens in minor league baseball is a pretty passionate love affair. If you love a minor league team, it's simply because they're your team. The players, if they're really good, they're gone.
That's just a little part of what you'll hear and see with 50 Summers. And when we think of the Royals, and we think of the Omaha Royals, and we think of the Storm Chasers, and I mean, just go down the list here of the who's who of baseball people Nebraskans love that make an appearance in this. Alex Gordon, the proud native son, George Brett. There are pictures my mother has I have not been able to grab and get rid of me in George Brett gear when I'm 3 years old, while my dad's playing softball. George is my guy. Warren Buffett makes an appearance. Jack McKeon. I mean, you sit down with so many important people to the game, to the national pastime, and it's a national story. It's a love affair, but it's also localized with the people you're able to get time with on this film, 50 Summers.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, it became apparent that you could really tell the broader story of minor league baseball. I'm always bad at this stuff. The macro through the micro of Omaha's experience. You know, so that's what was really cool. You know, can't thank enough, of course, Marty Cordero and Gary Green from the Storm Chasers, who were super supportive of the project and started to put, you know, this stuff together, really, you know, obviously vouching for us and putting some doors, opening some doors. And, you know, that's how we started, you know, talking to folks. So we shot, I think we shot like 47 interviews or 53 interviews, something like that. We got with George Brett and a few minutes with Alex down in spring training. Mm-hmm. We were in Surprise. I think it was in 2017. And then, you know, we visited with Mr. Buffett at his office, which was like super cool. And just like,
how is that?
It seems like
hang out with Warren Buffett and talk baseball.
Yeah. It seems like it would be everything that you would hear. It's vintage Warren Buffett in that. It was two emails. That's all. His assistant, they got back to us immediately. I got back to Marty immediately, I should say, was like, oh, you know, Mr. Buffett would love to talk about the, you know, Omaha baseball. It was kind of funny. His assistant was so nice and accommodating. And she's like, hey, so how's this working? How long are you talking to people? We're like, oh, it's whatever works. We're talking to most people for like 30 minutes to an hour. And she's like, oh, right on. so Mr. Buffett's going to have to pass. I think it was, he could give you 11 minutes. We're like, no, that's great. Whatever.
We'll be done in 10.
We'll be done, whatever. And, you know, she was like, oh yeah, come scout, like figure out whatever you need. Take as much time as you want to set up and tear down, but you'll visit with him for, you know, this amount of time. He was super cool. Talked baseball. I stumped him for like a second, cause I asked him to, like, I was like, hey, so who do you think was like a better hitter, Ted Williams or Stan Musial? And he was like, let me see. He was like super, super
Stan's
interesting.
Got more hits, doesn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah. Cause he set the National League record.
Yeah. That's an answer that didn't make, of course didn't make the film cause it wasn't super relevant, but I'm like, man, we're sitting with Warren Buffett. Like, I want to talk a little.
I think Ted had more wins during World War II.
Yeah. Little asterisk there, maybe.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, that was super great. Spoke with George Brett. The thing I remember about, Alex Gordon taking a minute with us, which was so cool. He was so pro. He had a rough day. I should know this because I don't want to misquote myself. I feel like maybe he had like a hat trick at the plate. He had like a really rough day in spring training. And I mean, you know, everybody knows. I mean, Alex Gordon is like a total stud, total competitor. He's, you know, he's not happy about that. But he still totally made, you know, Swanee in the Royals office set up the time that he was supposed to be there. It was still super cool, still on time, super participated. You know, it just was awesome because, you know, I think people can forget. I mean, dude, they're athletes or people. Like, when you have a bad game, probably even in spring training, the last thing that you want to do is talk to some guys making, you know, a documentary about Omaha. And
last thing you want is media.
Yeah, right?
Knowing Alex, let me go back to the cage.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. That was really neat. Talking to Jack McKean was incredible.
That guy's a bastion of knowledge. Remember him with the Marlins?
Cool. Oh, yeah. Dude, I probably had 6 different Jack McKean manager baseball cards in
sure
the 80s,
did.
All the teams, right?
The old top special in 87.
Yeah. he was great. We got with him in North Carolina. He happened to live... this is how much of a stud he is. So he lives, I think, maybe like, I don't know, 50 miles from Durham or something like that. You know, he's in he's got to be in his 80s. And we're like, I was like, okay, well, we're filming this other stuff in Durham. Like, we'll drive to, you know, your place, Mr. McKean. And he's like, oh, no, I'll just drive up to Durham. Just I'll meet you at the ballpark. I was just like, wow, that's amazing. He told so many awesome stories. You know, he was really great to get with. Jesse Cuevas, who for, you know, locally, another one of those, you know, if you're not familiar, is the legendary groundskeeper at Rosenblatt. For obviously College World Series and Royals. He was super cool to sit with. Lots of great stories.
Dan Napoli is joining us here. We're down here in the Rail Yard Roadshow Wednesday today with Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Schmidt, Dan Napoli in studio with us. And 50 Summers, the fantastic documentary touching on the love affair with the Royals and in a broader sense, just the connection minor league baseball has with its fans, and it is out for your purchase, out for your viewing. A lot of awards with this thing, but Dan made it along with Bill Hipshire. It's not about the awards, even though it's that quality. It's just a great time to sit back and indulge yourself in baseball, in the pastime, in the connections it makes. Dan, how can folks see 50 Summers? I said iTunes, yes, but there's some other options, and I've got about a minute and a half here. You've kind of gotten into your background, but ultimately when push came to shove to say yes to this project, why did you say yes?
It was an amazing project, you know? Like, I'm a storyteller. I'm a storyteller and a baseball guy. Like, how could you not want to direct this? I know, and I'm probably at the level as a director now where I could handle it. Maybe 5-6 years ago, maybe I would have been like a little intimidated by it, but I have done enough stuff. So yeah, it was never a question. I was like, yeah, Bill, let's do it. You can see it, iTunes, Amazon Prime, Google Play. Also, we're on a handful of cable VODs.
Okay.
So we are on Cox, Cox, Frontier, Comcast, Xfinity are kind of the main ones. So yeah, we came out Tuesday. That's where we live for right now. I think it's on like feature promo through iTunes up through the major league, opening day. So yeah, we just want people to check it out and experience that kind of minor league baseball thing.
Well, go to the Twitter handle for sure. 50 Summers is what we're talking about, at 50 Summers Film. Follow Dan on Twitter at ET Dan, and of course at Herd at Films. About a minute here. Dan Napoli's with us here. We're on site, Hale Varsity offices, letting you know about 50 Summers. Rob Riggle, my man, is the narrator here. That's got to be special.
Yeah, that was super cool, super crazy story. We actually recorded two voiceovers. I pulled an all-nighter. We hadn't heard back from Rob's folks yet, mm-hmm. from Rob's people. So I had lined up another narrator, guy I worked with for years. He was on his honeymoon mm-hmm. in Italy, but Matt Marshall is the guy's name. He was still going to go in. And then I get a call from Rob's agent that's like, hey, Rob would really like to do this. Does tomorrow at 2:30 work?
Yes.
Yes, it does, sir. But at the same time, I had to be safe in case something happened. So I stood up. I produced Matt via Skype in Italy mm-hmm. that night, stood up, and then got to produce Rob, who hit like a studio in Burbank. He basically, I think he had to do a appearance on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And then scooted over to record RVO. And he's super great guy. Obviously, huge Royals fan. We were super, super honored, super lucky that he took some time to voice this for us.
Dan, let's do this again. Thanks for jumping in today.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Mike Babcock's coming up. Hale Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, it's Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. On the road today, the home office here at Hale Varsity, high above the rail yard. Loved chatting 50 Summers, the documentary on minor league baseball and the Royals with Dan Napoli. He is an awesome dude, a phenomenal filmmaker, and check that out. If you're a baseball fan, check that out. If you're becoming a baseball fan, a guy that's locked in on baseball, and we'll hit some football with him. We say hi to Mike Babcock, historian, author, Hall of Famer, at MD Babs on Twitter is where you find him. Babbers, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Smitty.
That is great to hear. And we got done talking a little baseball with Dan. And
yeah.
Mike, you've been a longtime baseball guy. And, you know, let's spend a second here before we get into some football thoughts with spring ball around the corner. Specifically, Nebraska, as they're gearing up for a trip to Arizona State. And, you know, I know Will Bolt spoke with the media today. You know, what's the sense you get from Will here when it comes to late game struggles? How's he managing that with the kids at this point in the year?
Well, you know, one of the Spencer Schwellenbach talked today too, and one of the things that he said was that he really appreciated how the coaches were handling this, that they weren't getting mad at the players, they were remaining supportive. And, you know, what Bolt pointed out, I mean, the obvious thing is Nebraska has scored first in all six of those games and has been in a position, as Schwellenbach pointed out, has been in a position really to win every game that they've played. The problem is that they haven't got it done. I mean, they've had some problems in the bullpen. They've made some mistakes. They've made some fielding errors. They've done things that haven't enabled them to maintain those leads, but Bolt said that 75% of the time, if you score first, you're going to win. So at some point, that may start balancing out if they continue to play the way they have. And I thought that the attitude in general was very positive, and I think that's a good thing, obviously, with a new staff, with a team that's 1-5, we didn't think that they'd be there at this point. with a game against, with a series against a ranked opponent this weekend in Phoenix. Their attitude is very upbeat, I thought.
Mike Babcock's with us hitting Husker baseball. They head down to Sparky Land as Arizona State waits. So the approach is important here this part of the year, getting the old dust and rust knocked off if you're Nebraska baseball and you've played well enough to win. Now you need to start winning, but how you communicate that is very important, and that approach no doubt is weighing in on the players' minds in a positive sense, like you touched on. Offensively, with Nebraska Babbers, they pressed a little bit the last couple of games in the Tony Gwynn Classic. 31 strikeouts in 3 days. That's pretty different from their plate approach against Baylor, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's concerning. Obviously, that was one of the problems last season, is that they just struck out too much, and I don't know whether they were trying too hard or whatever. In both these series, they've started off really strong in the first game offensively. You know, they hit the ball on Friday night against San Diego. I think they had 18 hits, You know, they had a 7-0 lead at one point, and then it was 7-4 when Povich left the game. And you figure you're going to get 18 hits, you're probably going to win the game. But the bullpen let them down a little bit, and then you get into the second, third games of the series, and they're striking out a lot. They're getting beat 4-2 in one game, and 3-2 in the other. I think that, again, going back to being confident, I think you have to maintain that confidence, even though what you've seen so far is probably not conducive to being confident. And you have to feel like, well, the pieces are there. You know, let's just get them, put them together in the right way, and we're going to be successful. And, I think there's some reason to believe, Perry pitched well in relief for the second weekend in a row. They felt good about Tillotson's one inning because he's coming off injury. Schreiber had a rough outing, but then he came back and did okay. They need to get the bullpen squared away. I think that the starting pitching is going to come around. You know, they've had glimpses of that, and then they've had things that haven't been so good in the starting pitching. So there's just a lot of things that go into it, but you've got to be consistent offensively, and striking out is not something that you don't want to do it to the degree that that they did it in the weekend series just done.
Mike Babcock's with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, at MD Babs on Twitter. Previewing Nebraska, Arizona State. Babbers, want to shift to some Nebraska football, and you've got a couple of off-season stories that are out, a couple of different publications, mentioning Nebraska, looking at how 2019 went versus the expectations. One publication not going that far as to say, well, it's hot seat time. They're not saying that. But they are talking about this year being pivotal for Nebraska and Scott Frost. Yes, it's pivotal. Yes, you need to show some improvement. But how do you react to that word and that attachment of pivotal? We talked about this yesterday. I want to get your take on it today. How pivotal is 2020 for Nebraska and Scott Frost? Not in a danger sense, but just from a morale standpoint.
Well, that word gets tossed around, like you said. I mean, that's what people want to say is, well, now this is. I think we heard a little bit of that last year. They got to come back from that 4-win season, and their expectations were high. And then Bill Moose made some comment about 6-6 in a bowl would be pretty good, and everybody's like, gee, many Christmas, let's don't undercut expectations. And then they didn't get to that point, so now this is pivotal. But, from the overall, from the big picture standpoint, I guess Scott Frost got a 2-year extension last year already, so I don't think that it, from that standpoint, it's not pivotal. You want to see things going in the right direction, obviously, and I think that has to translate into wins and losses. But I think this team could be get 6 wins and get to a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, beyond that, I don't know. I mean, I think I overestimated last season. Certainly, I don't think necessarily it was going to be 8 wins, but I thought they'd win 7, certainly 6. I just think that this is really the age now of immediate satisfaction, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you look at it and you say 3 years in, that's pivotal because Scott Frost has got to get things going. And it's not that simple. You know, I think we've talked about this before, but when Frank was replaced by Bill Callahan, you know, and Bill Callahan had the 4-6 season, and everybody was saying, well, you know, everybody has it. You know, Oklahoma had a down period, and Alabama had a down period, and there's our down period, so let's get back to winning national titles, you know, like one season was going to be the down period. It's not that easy. And I think it gets more difficult with each passing year because of the internet age. It's more difficult to recruit now. There are just a lot of factors that, you know, you're in the Big Ten. It's a whole different dynamic with the Big Ten. So, you know, I want to see progress. And if that means pivotal, then I guess it is pivotal, but I don't think that that's going to be like, well, we've turned the corner now, you know, there we go. I think it's a slower process than that.
I think you're right on. I think the process to get into being able to not only be in every game, but win the majority of your games is, I mean, it's a long road. And got a couple minutes here, Mike. When I look at Nebraska and I think of, you know, a bounce back season, it can be 6-6, it can be 7-5. What I'm looking for is playing at a high level and not having screw ups. I mean, putting it bluntly, where you have a kick return you give up, or you have momentum seized and then It's not literally, but it's fumbled away. I'm looking for better execution, coaching, and players together in some of the tight games. You don't have to win all the tight games, but don't beat yourself. I guess that's what I'm looking forward to this season.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is if you're going to get beat, you get beat. You don't do things to cause that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You get beat and you walk off the field and say that was a good opponent. You know, you did everything you could. That's the thing, is that you do everything that you can. You put it all out there. You don't self-destruct. And if it doesn't work out, then I think you can. There's a pivotal thing. I mean, if you get it, even if you're 6-6, and you look at those 6 losses and say, well, you know what, we laid it all out there and we didn't self-destruct. We just got beat. You know, I think you can live with that. But when you go out there and you do something, you self-destruct, you get penalties, you do those kinds of things, that's what you don't want to see in year 3, I guess, because you're bringing in your own guys and recruiting. You've had some time now to learn. You've got guys out there that should know the system. Let's don't self-destruct. Let's go out there and give it all we got and give them a good run and see how it comes out.
That's what I'm looking forward to seeing in 2020, how they adapt, adjust, and follow through. Mike, we'll talk next week. Awesome to get caught up and chat some baseball and football. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Smitty.
All right, love it. Love talking with Mike Babcock. Give him a follow on Twitter at MDBabs. We'll get caught up a little golf thought or two with Shuey, Mike Shuhart. We're here at Hale Varsity in the Rail Yard, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back here, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We are down at the Hail Varsity offices, high above the rail yard. I am jacked. It's going to be just an awesome next few weeks with so many folks coming into town for state basketball, of course, state swimming. And it's going to be vibrant down here. Got hoops tomorrow, Nebraska, Ohio State. Dan Napoli kicked us off. He is the writer and director for 50 Summers, an incredible film on the Royals, the Storm Chasers, and, of course, minor league baseball as a whole. So get to iTunes and check that out. And you know what? Herdat Films, Bill Hipsher, just incredible, incredible work. Derek Peterson is going to join us here next hour. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. It is sunny out. It is nice. I'm sure he is helping somebody with their three-foot putting. We say hi to Mike Schuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey, how are you? You in the sun? You outside?
No, I'm in my academy. I just got done with a lesson. So
that's a pause. Schmidt, it's cold out, so no, yeah. I'm not outside wearing
no
sleeves like a lineman.
I'm a fair weather guy now, so I stay inside as much as I can.
No, tell me about the academy. Tell me about how folks can get all sorts of worked up so it's a great opening round in summer.
Yeah, man, it's, you know, you mentioned state basketball. You know, the best thing about state basketball is basketball, but when state basketball's over, that means golf season starts. Mm-hmm. And so that means golf season's right around the corner, and the weather looks like it's going to be fantastic coming up. So, yeah, we got guys out here hitting balls right now, a bunch of high school kids getting ready for the season. So, doing a bunch of fittings.
Good.
Getting ready, man. They're getting anxious.
Well, we all want incredible weather to descend on us shortly. That is for certain, for certain. So what is kind of on your mind, Shuey, for the upcoming PGA season, my friend? What are some storylines? What are some things that's on your radar here, bud, for 2020?
Obviously Tiger, you know, because is Tiger going to be able to compete for majors? Is he ever going to break the record? I think that would be probably number one. Kepka, can he basically continue what he's done the last few years? You know, his great play. Patrick Reed, that's always going to be a good one, man. I think that's going to be an ongoing little saga. So, and then who's the new superstar this year? There's always somebody that comes up that really has a great season that kind of puts themselves in that, like Koepka did a few years ago. You know, he wasn't a household name, and then all of a sudden here's a guy winning all these majors. So that will be pretty exciting. That's the part I like. I just like to see the new guys, some of the young guys or guys that have been out there that finally get it figured out a little bit and take their game to another level. That's what I like to see.
Who's that next? I mean, prognosticate who is just on the fringe right now that could blow up. I mean, who's a player you're watching, you've been following, you're anxious for, and you think could break through?
A kid named Victor Hovland.
Okay.
Just won they had the tournament down in Mexico for the kind of the top 50 players in the world, and then they had a secondary event that they played, and he just won that event. So he's a tremendous player. Played at Oklahoma State. He's one kid that I really am looking at. You know, a kid named Abraham Anser, who played really good in the President's Cup. You know, the kind of those things kind of jumpstart guys, you know, when they play really good in events like that. All of a sudden they kind of take them games to another level, just confidence more than anything. It's like, yeah, I'm one of the best players out here. So he's another one. And Matthew Wolf, you know, he's kind of a different looking golf swing, incredibly talented. See where he kind of goes with another year out there, getting more comfortable. So very, very unique golf swing. It's a mile.
What's it look like? What's his swing remind you of?
Oh, it's a modern day version of Jim Furyk.
Okay.
It's like a octopus on a folding chair. Crazy.
That's good. Mike Shewhart's with us, Wilderness Ridge Golf. We catch up with Shuey every Wednesday, 4:40. So, Shuey, I got to get a football question in, and spring ball's nearing. We were talking to Babbers about this, and I'm going to get your take on it, get a little panel going. We'll talk to Pizzo about it, too. But improvement looks like what for you in 2020?
O-line, you know, can they, it sounds like that's going to be better in the sense just because they got more depth. They're going to be young, but I think they got more players there creating a competition. You got a few veterans that are still there. The quarterback battle is going to be really interesting to me. You know, can Martinez come back and play like he's kind of predicted to? And showed early his freshman year, but man, you got some good quarterbacks that are in that room. So it'll be interesting to see if can he hold off those other guys and retain that. And he's gonna have to play really well to do that, I think. You know, McCaffrey's good.
That
and then
kid's
the
really
a little
good.
Replacement, yeah, a little replacement of their D line. You know, they lost quite a few guys there, so it's like, how's that gonna look?
I'm excited for the back seven. I mean, I think you've got some names you know on the defensive line. You lose a lot of production on the defensive line, but your linebacking core, clearly the outside linebacker spot is a storyline. It will be until somebody turns themselves into a Griffin, if that's ever possible. But
yeah.
You lose some, but you got quite a bit back in your secondary. And it could really be pretty fun to watch here for Nebraska this spring as they gear towards, yeah, you know, bowl eligibility, but also kind of juggling the internal expectations with maybe a little bit off the radar and not so much headline making for the football team. Shuey, we got a minute here. I need to know about them Divot Dogs and what folks can come see and sign up for. I know you got Fit Fridays on the horizon. We're excited to be part of that with you, and Masters is around the corner to come see you. But on a bigger sense, if folks want to get their kids involved to get taught by you, how do they get that happening?
Yeah, just call the pro shop. We have our junior league. We still have a few spots left. There's not many. So we have our junior league. We have our summer camps that kids can get involved in. My Divot Dogs, they're already full. We're going to start practice here in about another month. So that'll be really exciting to see if we can retain the belt. We got a couple programs. So we call it our Divot Dog Academy. That's in the spring. So there's spots still available in that. So there's lots of stuff. So anything you want, you just call out to the pro shop, man. They can tell you all the things that are available and what's still available.
That is good. Go see Shuey out of Wilderness Ridge. Shuey, be out to see you sometime soon, brother, with this nice weather. Thanks for making time today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, bud. There he is, Mike Shewhart. Winding down hour one here at the Hale Varsity offices in the rail yard. Derek Peterson coming up next hour.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Winding down this first hour, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We're here in the rail yard at the Hale Varsity offices. Check out the first hour. Dan Napoli, writer and director for the film 50 Summers. It's an incredible documentary on minor league baseball, Royals, and so many important folks sat down with Dan to talk baseball and their love for baseball. Really awesome project by Herd At Films, Dan Napoli, Bill Hipsher, and it is available on Amazon Prime, iTunes, different outlets for you to check it out. You'll love it. It'll get you in the mood for baseball, and it'll make you smile. I promise you that. Mike Babcock, incredible. This hour, we talked a little Husker baseball as they get ready for Arizona State, Nebraska football. You just heard from Mike Shewhart. Derek Peterson is standing by. Good to get caught up with Dr. Petey, talk all things Nebraska with him. Rick Pizzo coming up, and reminder about your friends at the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety. One out of three fatal crashes involves an impaired driver. Driving drunk, buzzed, or high is never acceptable, and law enforcement officers are working around the clock to stop it with sobriety checkpoints and saturation patrols. As a driver, make that correct choice of a non-alcoholic drink or have a pre-selected designated driver. Be smart. Start the conversation. Who's driving home? And this is brought to you by the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Elijah, what do you know, man? How you been?
I'm doing good. It's been a quick first hour for me over here. I'm actually wearing my my Denver Broncos crew neck sweatshirt you always make fun of me for, because I knew you wouldn't be able to see me today. So I thought I would wear it and avoid getting getting roasted.
is it the cleanest dirty shirt you found? I say that because today would have been Johnny Cash's 88th birthday.
Would it have? Wow.
Yes. Big Johnny Cash family. So is your sweatshirt clean, or is it just what you grabbed off
the floor? Oh, it's clean. And I'm saying clean in terms of, like, it's been washed, and it's also just, like, a beautiful sweatshirt. It's that 1996 AFC West Division Champs sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful sweatshirt. I'm not going to lie.
You know what happened in 96?
Was it the Jaguars year?
That was the Mark Brunell Jacksonville, yeah. Jaguar. I mean, you had to stop, I guess, with the AFC West champs versus, you know, AFC champs, because the one seed got rocked by the startup kids. Now, in fairness, that was an incredible game. It's where Brunell kind of out Elway'd Elway with some scrambling moments.
And I got to say, the Broncos came back better off that game as well, going back to back after that. It's almost what
they learned from that. 97, 98 was the year of the donkey. So let's get some folks locked in. DeBebe is going to be at PBA the 11th of March. What do you want to do here? Caller 5?
Works for me.
Caller 5 right now. We'll send you to see DeBebe at PBA the 11th of March. Caller 5 now at 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Caller 5, pair of DeBebe tickets, and we'll have another pair tomorrow and Friday. We're down at Longwell's tomorrow ahead of Nebraska, Ohio State. Here at the Hale Varsity offices, sunny out, a little chilly, but it's good to be on the road. We'll talk to Derek Peterson coming up. Rick Pizzo's on the way. Hour 2 next, Hale Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hale Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hale Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Tower 2. It's Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. And we are here at the Hale Varsity offices. Rail Yard Roadshow Wednesday. We welcome in the good doctor. He's out of his scrubs. And he is geared up in OKC gear. Derek Peterson at Dr. PDHV. On site, in person, in living color. Good sir, how are you?
I'm good. I'm on Hawaii time right now. I was telling the rest of the office earlier this morning that the fiance set a thing on our Amazon Alexa device, mm-hmm. where she asks the weather in Hawaii every morning, and it's like 80s right now.
That's where you're heading?
That's where we're going.
That is good.
Monday, March 16th, we uh-huh. leave, and we're there for
and
a week.
The party is the 14th?
Yep.
That is awesome.
Yep.
Congrats.
Thank you.
And I think, gosh, man.
It is stressful right now, so I'm a giant ball of stress, soon to be a pool of stress.
Okay, so we will get to football and hoops, I promise.
Yeah.
How active or out of the way have you adhered to our friend Mike Leach's wedding planning rules?
I was very active in the beginning.
Good faith? As in, sweetie, I'm here for you. I want to be a part of this. It's important to me.
No, it was I was planning stuff. While she was finishing up grad school.
Okay. So you're a really awesome teammate.
And then
me, not so much.
Well, she finished grad school, and it was like, I am in charge of the food. No, being her, I am in charge of the food and the cake, and you are not having any input whatsoever. I don't know what we're having at our wedding. Like, I don't know what the food is going to be.
You can charge like seven at the door, and people will pay it.
I don't know what like the, I don't know what the type of cake that we're eating is. So some of these things, they're going to be surprises to me when I show up.
Okay. Well, again, kudos to you for being a wonderful teammate, then stepping out of the way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good, man. That's awesome.
I was told, though, that right now I'm in charge of bubbles. We're not allowed to have, like, whatever the...
The dancer?
The sparklers. I don't know where your head's at. We're not allowed to have the sparklers as we leave the venue.
Enjoy the joke.
So we're... I don't know what's happening right now. So we have bubbles.
Right, because you blow bubbles versus throwing rice.
Yeah, yeah. So I was told that I'm in charge of that. So I was given a task.
Okay.
Hopefully I don't drop the ball.
You'll be fine. Two hands, goal line.
It is a...
Nuzzle forward.
It's a task low on the...
importance?
The totem pole, though, so...
You want it to be perfect and beautiful for her and remembered always fondly.
Yes.
Period. Do you have friends that you're worried about drinking in the parking lot?
No.
For a friend.
No. Yeah. Nobody that I'm worried about. We'll have fun.
All right.
We're at a point though where pretty much every day at least one of us will make a comment. Sometimes it's both of us. We'll make a comment about how, like, man, we should have just taken the money and eloped.
That's because a popular take.
Not because
family would have been pissed about that.
Yeah, they would have been, but it would have been like parents and siblings are there, so not like a full-on eloping.
Gotcha.
Elopement or eloping,
escape is the term,
whatever the phrase is. It wouldn't have been full-on. Parents would have still been there, but it would have been like saving us the stress of the last month and a half that's been brutal.
You'll enjoy the walk down the aisle, seeing her and the family association and all your friends and family that are there.
It'll
be totally worth it.
Good.
All right, football. Will spring ball be worth it? It's been quiet.
Nice segue.
It's been very quiet, and it'll get kicked off here March 9th, I think.
Somewhere around that, yeah. We got like a week and a half left.
We got a week and a half, and I think we're all ready for some Husker news, and the build continues, right, for Nebraska football. And you know, I want to get your thoughts here as to things that are on the to-do list for Coach Frost, his team, his coaching staff. And first thing I want to get to is, like, the inconsistency on offense, be it a penalty, be it a run game that may not be as locked in, third downs, quarterback inconsistency. Part of that's protection. Part of that's decision-making. Do you think you'll see positive steps? It's spring, so it's controlled. You can make it as hard or as easy as you want. But ultimately, do you think by the time spring finishes up here, I'm going to fast forward, that Nebraska's a much more polished unit? Because year one, they were just scrappy. You didn't know what to expect. It was new for everybody. Finished great in the season. Last year, pats on the back, hype, fist pounds, whatever, and the bottom fell out more times than not, and a lot of it was their own self-harm versus someone actually just lining up and kicking their butt. Can Nebraska be a better football team? Yes, but when it comes to the little things, that's what I'm interested in seeing, and you'll see the little things worked on and executed and hopefully applied in the spring to the fall.
Yeah, the thing that you said about polish, I don't know that Nebraska wasn't or at least on the road to being a polished football team as the 2019 season wrapped up. Their penalties got better. That improved in a big way, I think, over the course of the season. The issues that they had, particularly on offense, you can kind of chalk it up to youth. You know, perfect example, Cam Jurgens with the snap. Like, he'd never played center before.
No, and by mid-year and beyond, he was really good.
And it would still crop up every now and then, but the number one on their to-do list, their checklist for not just the spring, but the entire offseason for this offense, is to just get more physical at every level. More physicality at the point of attack on the offensive line, more physicality from the running backs, being willing to run between the tackles, because that was a problem early last year. The guy's not here anymore. He didn't want to run between the tackles. Being more physical at that level, being more physical blocking on the perimeter, and you know, the expectation is that Matt Lubick will help in that regard. And it was funny, I was actually talking to somebody about Matt Lubick, and I referenced Coach Frost from his Sports Nightly appearance, where he said that one of the first things that he said Lubick will improve with the wide receivers is their blocking on the edge. And so I asked this
more
guy,
swing passes, come on.
There will be more screen passes is what I've been told.
But they'll be effectively executed.
Look at Oregon. Well, it's
bubbles. The bubble's a great thing. Back to your bubbles.
Yeah, it's got to be better. It's got to be blocked better on the perimeter. It's got to be thrown better. It has to be in front of the dude instead of behind the guy. And they just have to draw it up a little bit in a more timely fashion. But the thing that I was told was that Lubick learned pass blocking from Frost, or you know, blocking on the perimeter from Frost.
And Frost was great at
Frost
that.
Frost learned
as
it in the NFL,
receiver.
Yeah. And the way he wants it done is going to be the way that Lubick teaches it. And so the hope is that they are better on the outside. They just need to be a more physical offense. Frost has moved towards, ever since he left UCF, he's moved towards a more run-heavy offense. And this offense is still a spread you out, hit you with horizontal stuff, and then go. But at its base level, it still wants to be super physical, and he talks about it all the time when he says I wanted to mold Oregon speed with Nebraska Husker power, and that's still a work in progress, and it's not something that you can do overnight because you have to get the strength and development aspects up. And you know, I think one of the things, I don't know if maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I've noticed a little bit more content coming out from some of these these pre-spring workouts that they've been having or get-togethers that they've been having. I think maybe they're starting to feel a little bit better about where they are from a physicality standpoint, from a strength and conditioning standpoint, from a development, from just the way that their team looks. I think they're starting to feel a little bit better about it.
Derek Peterson's with us here. We're at the Hale Varsity headquarters in the rail yard. And a little spring football talk here for Dr. Petey at Dr. Petey HV is where you follow him. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Mac at our ESPN studios. Physicality's key. You want to be throwing the punches, and Frost is going to get that handled with this offense. When it comes to run dominant and being physical,
yeah, right. You want to have the defense on its heels, because then you can hit them with the pace that you have, and then that's where everything kind of coalesces with this.
Yeah, and the other side of it too is if you're going against a physical offense, your defense will get better from that. And Nebraska's just not lived a great life since they moved into the Big Ten, and that's been years, stopping Big Ten run games. And if you're going against a spread offense, I think of Michigan back when they had Rich Rod there, right? And you had the Michigan offense scoring 45 a game with the Rich Rod spread that he brought from West Virginia. Well, the Michigan defense had no answer.
Was that Denard Robinson?
Yes.
Was that the time?
You had Tate Forcia, Denard Robinson. You had some magicians at quarterback. And
it was when NCAA football was still a thing.
It was, and they were putting a NCAA football-type yards per carry, monster big plays. Now, the problem is you can't set your defense. Your defense can't get typically a good week of practice in trying to slam somebody. If you're going again, can your defense do its own thing? And Nebraska did this many moons ago where they ran the option. Okay, they were able to run the option and I formation and do the Osborne offense. But defensively in a 4-3, they were still always great against the run because that's what they practiced against. But the teams they had to beat to win a championship, Florida was shotgun, Florida State was shotgun, Miami was shotgun or three wide, one back, Washington, the Huskies, Colorado, they were all one back teams. So they were getting the running back locked up on your linebacker. Nebraska is still able to run their offense without switching their offense and still defend the spread of out teams and still stop the run. If Nebraska's run game gets downhill like they want it to, defensively they'll be able to be better against stopping the Iowas and Wisconsins, but be versatile enough to mess with Purdue. Ohio State's their own beast. You get what I'm saying. Yep. Can you match up? That's key to what you said here about being more physical. And switch gears to basketball here. You have a transfer that is headed to Lincoln. Nothing official from Nebraska yet, but Jacob Padilla, really good story on Kobe King, kid out of Wisconsin, a scorer. We'll talk to Rick Pizzo more in depth about Kobe King here in about 7 minutes. But this is a pretty big time get. I mean, you're getting a guy that's proven. You're supposed to get a guy that's been pretty versatile in the Big Ten, can drive it, can shoot it, can score it. And he was clearly unhappy. There was a tough incident at Wisconsin. Well, you know, Fred Hoiberg's system and reputation helped make this happen.
Yeah, 12 points per game score in conference play this year.
It's awesome.
Not a bad thing to add. He's a 6'4 guard. He's a bigger-bodied guard. I think they're starting to fill the roster out nicely. You look, and this will be their last scholarship. They're now full, I believe. But he shot 29% from three, 29.6% from three over his career at Wisconsin. So that's a little bit interesting. I think this offseason for them is going to be, I'm going to say interesting again, really interesting in the sense that they didn't shoot the ball well this year. Now they're adding a guy in Kobe King who hasn't shot the ball well.
From three.
So, like, where's the improvement this offseason? Is it one of those things where they firmly believe that you can teach shooting as long as you have all of the other things there that they look for? Length and size, and if you have the right shooting stroke and the right mechanics to really work on the shot, they believe that you can teach shooting, and that's been Fred's thing his entire career. So they haven't shot the ball well, and that, you know, that's not hiding. I mean, I think they're shooting, what, 32-33% from three this year, and I've said this number before, I'll say it again, Fred's never coached a team that shot below 35% from three. So Their looks have been open, and they're getting good looks out of the offense sometimes. They're just not making them. What changes? And I'm really curious to see what Kobe King's role would be with the team, because now you're starting to get to a place
where... How about
a
shot maker? Doesn't matter where. Just make shots. How about a layup maker?
Yeah, yeah.
That drives me nuts every game.
I think they're going to be in maybe a weird spot, because think about, like, the guys that they're going to have, like Cam Mack, Teddy Allen, Gervais Green, Deshaun Burke. Now you're adding Kobe King to the mix. You got Thor.
They're not keeping everybody.
You don't want to be that small again.
No.
So you don't really want to be playing three and four guard lineups.
No. You need some hybrid wing dudes.
Yeah, which is a guy like Derek Walker, a guy like Delano Banton, who could be a hybrid guy out on the perimeter. So Shamil Stevenson.
Yeah.
Now you're looking at, like, who from that group of guards that I just named, who gets squeezed.
Or who has to accept a different role.
And will they have guys after the way that this season has played out that will be willing to accept a different role?
Well, you know, 7-20 is...
Yes, but oftentimes when you go through a season like this and you know, you kind of go through the labor of love that is this season.
You put up with it. You want
to be able to reap the benefits of what this season is going to do for you later down the line. You don't want to be the guy that, like, sets everything up and then somebody else comes in and gets to experience the success.
No, you want
to be the guy that's on the court making the shots, winning the games. You don't want to be sitting on the bench while the new guy that just came in gets to be the star of the show.
I did the heavy lifting. Yeah. Let me shoot.
Yeah.
Let's see if they make some layups. 10 seconds. You feel good about Ohio State tomorrow night, Nebraska?
Nah, I don't know.
You're like, eh.
You got one thing that I could maybe feel good about, and that's Northwestern.
All right. It's all right. Dr. Petey, appreciate you, man.
Thanks, bud.
Good to hang out. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffets next. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Big Big Ten Buffet time. Hail Varsity Radio. We say hi to Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network. Nothing official nor confirmed yet, but the word is out that Nebraska could land transfer Kobe King, talented kid out of Wisconsin. Rick, you've seen a lot of Big Ten basketball, and you've seen specifically Kobe King, his time at Wisconsin. If this does happen, what's Nebraska getting? Can you kind of give us some analysis on Kobe King?
Yeah, you're getting a pure scorer. I mean, you're getting a guy who, when he gets in rhythm, can fill it up as good and as often as anybody on Nebraska's roster right now, if not better. Obviously, a guy who did good things in something of a more tight system. I think Fred Hoiberg allows his guys to probably freelance a little bit more than Greg Gard in that Wisconsin system does. That obviously is appealing to a guy like Kobe King. He's a guy that, when he has the ball in his hands, can make things happen off the dribble, but he can also catch and shoot. I mean, he's simply a guy that can score the basketball, and when you are doing things like Fred Hoiberg wants to do, as far as creating a team and creating a different style than Nebraska has probably played in the past and that a lot of people expect from him, you need to go out and get established guys and guys who understand both their roles and what they could do at a new place. And if this happens, I think that's why it's appealing to Kobe King.
Another tight one against the Illini. They're tied, you know, about 13, 14 minutes left in the second half. And the Illini, you know, eventually puts Nebraska away. And what's Nebraska shown you despite losing? It doesn't seem like, I mean, I see your guys' pre- and post-games, and every coach you talk to that ends up beating Nebraska, there's this look of, wow, we kind of got out of there with our lives. And I mean, not every game's close, but you know what? I think Nebraska fans are proud that it seems like Nebraska gives insane effort every game.
And I think that is what has stuck out to me. No Deshaun Burke a couple of games ago and nearly pull off the upset against Maryland. No Cam Mack against Illinois, and that game is tied at 46, I believe, before this team simply ran out of gas. And I think we've seen that a lot. When you don't have a ton of depth, and you certainly don't have a ton of depth that can score, you are going to run out of gas against teams that are able to get up and down the floor. And I think eventually that's what happened against Maryland. I think that's what happens against Illinois. Both those teams have all Big Ten level players on the inside and outside. You know, Maryland with Cowan and Jalen Smith, Illinois with Io DeSumo and Kofi Coburn, and those guys were terrific. All of those guys were terrific in the two games that Nebraska played against them, and yet the Huskers still had a chance to win both games. So I think it says a lot about the fact that this team knows it's playing on Wednesday night. This team knows it has basically no chance to get to the postseason unless it pulls off a miracle on ice type thing and runs through the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis. And yet this team has not quit, not for 1 minute. And I think that is the most impressive thing of what has been happening this year in Lincoln with Fred Hoiberg's team.
Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio at BTN. Rick Pizzo is where you follow him. Rick, some thoughts here. It's been a busy Big Ten week. You had Sparty outlast Iowa tonight. You have Maryland at Minnesota, Rutgers, Penn State. A crazy slate Thursday with Michigan, Wisconsin, and, of course, Nebraska hosting Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa. I mean, a pretty thick, rugged schedule here ending February into March. As we look ahead, Penn State's, I don't want to say slipped a bit, but they've gotten knocked off the last couple of times. Maryland keeps on doing their thing. I ask you every week, let's hear a Sparty report, right? What's your vibe and your read on Michigan State now? They put a couple of wins together after struggling.
Yeah, they showed me a lot last night. They didn't look great for a large portion of that game, and then they found a way. Cassius Winston led the way. Xavier Tillman was really good defensively, but also Rocket Watts is a really big late shot. That's the kind of stuff that Tom Izzo needs to see, because Winston can't do it all by himself. And those guys that are either young or have been inconsistent need to play like they're veterans and stop being that inconsistent. And I think we saw a little bit of that late against Iowa. I saw that Michigan State is a very dangerous team, but I will couch that by saying if they have one of those games, and they've had multiple this year, where they turn the ball over 18, 20 times and they watch their young guys press and try to make up for those turnovers by making bad decisions, they're also a team that could get bounced in the first round. I really believe that. I think that's the story with so many Big Ten teams this year, that if the matchups are right and they play to their potential, I think there are a half dozen teams that could maybe be Final Four, certainly Elite Eight teams, and I don't think there is a single team that is immune to an early upset.
It just depends what night they show up, right? And that's what's crazy about Michigan State is, as solid as they are, as long and athletic as they are, and they can beat you from three, they can beat you driving, they can beat you on the block. They just don't take care of the basketball, man, and I can't get it. I don't understand why.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when you get into the postseason, that's why teams generally that have experienced point guards who take care of the basketball are the teams that advance. Great scores are really important. You need to be able to fill up the rim. Rim protectors and interior defenders are really important. But in today's game of basketball, in this day and age where it is about transition and three-point shooting, you need a point guard to protect the ball in transition, to make the right decisions, and to either make those threes or get the ball to the guys who can make those threes. When you turn the ball over too much and you have too much inexperience on the court, that's when you are a highly seeded team that gets knocked off by a more veteran team from either a smaller league or that had an up-and-down season and comes in as a 10 or 11 seed, but is really dangerous.
Rick, what's your take on Ohio State? What's coming into Lincoln Thursday?
Man, I have no idea. So Kyle Young, I understand it's a game-time decision and a little ankle issue, but likely to play. Chris Holtman says, I think he's going to make the trip, and then they're going to see how he feels, rehab, pregame warm-ups. I think he's an important part of what Ohio State's been doing lately because you can't just focus down low on Caleb Wesson. And I know Ohio State's turned the corner a little bit, but I still look at them and I still get a little nervous if they don't shoot the ball well. Can they defend game in and game out well enough in a situation like the Big Ten tournament where you're going to have to win four games in 4 days because they're not going to be, in all likelihood, one of the top four seeds? Or when you get into the NCAA tournament, can you do that with just one day of rest? I think that Chris Holtman's a terrific coach, but the game against Iowa was an eye-opener to me. Iowa was really thin. They basically played with seven guys, and they weren't able to devise a game plan, Ohio State, defensively to slow down Iowa. The Hawkeyes scored 85 points. To me, that is a scary game to look back on because I think this Ohio State team needs to be predicated on defense first to make a postseason run.
Rick, I want to ask you about a great coach in the Big Ten that is no longer in the NBA. And I know it's been about a week since Beilein has parted ways with Cleveland. And I'm interested, is there a spot he could land back in the Big Ten? You've covered him. Does he retire? Does he go get another college job? There's some other programs that would love to have him. What's next for Coach Beilein?
He's 67, Chris. And yes, I think that he is a young 67. And yes, I could see him coaching again. But I've been asked this question a couple of times ever since that resignation, the parting of the ways from the Cavs became official. Where would he really go inside the Big Ten? What job right now is clamoring for a new head coach? What fan base? What team is going to be looking for a coach at the end of this year? I don't really see one. I mean, is there an unforeseen opening somewhere that wants to look at a guy like Steve Peichel or that wants to look at another coach who's doing great things? I just don't see within the landscape of the Big Ten an opening taking place right now. You know, I've heard some rumblings about Indiana fans being unhappy. It can't be a revolving door. You've got to give guys more than 3 years. So I wouldn't be surprised if Tom Beilein comes back into college coaching. I just don't see in the Big Ten where that would be an option before the 2020-2021 season.
What are you hearing in Minnesota?
No, I think Richard's fine. I do. Listen, they have two really good players and then some complimentary guys. I don't think that Minnesota is a job in the Big Ten where you are going to be expected to get that team to the NCAA tournament every year. I just don't. It just becomes too difficult to recruit. You're not always going to get the best guys in your state. We've seen some of those guys go to places like Duke over the last couple of years. He's gotten good recruits. He's won games, important games. He's won a couple of postseason games. I just don't think that there's nearly as much of an issue there as some people think there should be.
Rick, we'll get you out of here on this. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio. Getting close to spring ball for Nebraska and Coach Frost. What would a bounce-back season look like to you for Nebraska?
I think anything in which you are going to a bowl game that is not considered one of the, man, I really don't care unless I'm a huge fan base guy, bowl game. So that probably means, and you know the bowls I'm talking about, it's something close to or after Christmas or closer to New Year's Day. I mean, those are the games you want to be involved in. And I'm sorry if you're playing on December 26th or December 27th or even earlier than that, it's one of those, well, we're in the postseason, but okay, we're in the postseason. We got 14, 15 more practices. So I don't really think that that's going to make the fan base that much happier. Obviously, it's goal number one to get to the postseason, but I think it's to get to a decent bowl game. I think it's to manage the non-conference because that's vitally important right now. And I also think it's picking up at least one game that I hate to describe it as maybe a game you're not supposed to win, but a game that you're the underdog in, a game against a team that's had your number the last couple of years, a game against a team that's been in those type of bowl games over the last couple of years. You've got to have at least one of those wins coming into year number three.
You know, getting that signature win, so to speak, I mean, could you knock off an Ohio State or a Penn State? That's a long, long ways away. But how about taking down some teams that got a win streak against you in the Big Ten West? I mean, there's opportunity there, as you and I both know how difficult the 2020 schedule is to close with. But that all makes sense with when it comes to Nebraska and bounce back. Rick,
well, look at their last five games, Chris.
Oh, I know.
I don't have this in front of me, right? But I think it is, in some order, Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, in some order.
That's the order.
And that's the order? Okay, so that is, I mean, think about that. Think about that schedule. I mean, you have Penn State, I believe, is at home. Minnesota, I believe, is at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you are able to win those two home games, and let's say you sprinkle in one of those other wins, let's say you beat either Ohio State, Iowa, or Wisconsin. If you go 3-2 in those five games and two are in front of your home crowd, then I just answered your question. That's a successful season because you obviously expect to manage the non-con against Central, South Dakota State, and obviously a pretty tough game against Cincinnati.
Rick, we'll get caught up again. Awesome stuff. Thanks for a few minutes.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it, man. Take care.
Gotta love Rick Pizzo. Big Ten Buffet time, Hail Varsity Radio. Working through hour two down here in the Rail Yard Road Show. Jock Talk on the way, Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, and Dr. Brandon Seifert with us on a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, let's talk Kyrie Irving. He is awesome. He is talented. He is injury prone. What's going on with him?
Yeah, so sounds like he's been nursing a shoulder injury, kind of even going back into November. They haven't been super clear about what exactly that is, but you know, missed some time there early in the season, came back, was kind of on a tear for a while, and then it sounds like he retweaked this again over the past week and went in and saw a specialist sometime in the last couple of days and decided he's going to hang it up for the year and undergo a surgical procedure for his shoulder. Again, we're not super clear on what type of shoulder injury that is. We can do a little bit of speculation here just kind of based on some of the symptoms he's, you know, at least put out there, described in the paper. One of those of which was he's feeling like there's a lot, obviously there's pain, but a lot of weakness, difficulties kind of lifting the ball up overhead, which makes you worry about more of kind of a rotator cuff issue. As we kind of focus in or dial in on rotator cuff issue, it's important just to think about anatomically what is that. And so rotator cuff, those are essentially the muscles that surrounds kind of the inner part of the shoulder. There's four main rotator cuff muscles. One in the front is called the subscapularis. There's two on top called the infraspinatus and supraspinatus, and then one way in the back called the teres minor. Most commonly, the one that's injured is kind of the one on the top towards the front called the supraspinatus. Essentially, those are the muscles that surround the shoulder joint, provide some stability, but obviously the strength part of that is the most important piece. So probably he's been dealing with some issues with that. If it's not on the rotator cuff side, then being the, you know, the young athlete that he is, you worry more about the labrum. We've talked about that in the past. That's that ring structure sits around the socket. You remember the shoulder's a ball and socket joint. So it could be having some labral issues, but kind of based on the symptoms, we'll speculate here, this is probably more of a rotator cuff issue he's dealing with.
We're talking about Kyrie Irving and Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert is with us. Now, Dr. Brandon, you know, you look at Irving here. He first injured the shoulder, it sounds like November 4th, against the Pelicans. He kept playing for 10 more days through the November 14th game in Denver, and then he missed 26 straight games. And then on December 4th, he had an outlet report. Surgery could be an option. What if anything, did continuing to play do to his shoulder? And I know we're discussing rotator cuff versus just maybe arthroscopic options. I mean, there's everything's on the table here. We don't know the severity, but how badly by playing 10 more games could he have really hurt himself for this season and made his rehab even much more difficult?
Yeah, you know, it really depends on, yeah, like you kind of speculated, you know, what's the degree of the injury, severity of the injury. You know, if we're talking maybe just a little bit of some partial tearing in that rotator cuff, you know, then it's just more kind of an inflammation type of an issue. If we're talking that, again, it's kind of maybe a smaller partial injury, maybe doesn't need to be sewed back together. If you're kind of leaning more on that side of the injury spectrum, then, you know, playing another 10 or 15 games, even longer, is an okay thing to do. You can kind of nurse it along through the season, and typically those are things that, you know, if they're not getting better with some rest, steroid shot, which he had, and some therapy, easy thing to go in with the scope, clean some things up, take out some bursitis, clean up any scar tissue that's there, which clearly probably has some with all the sports he's played. And then you're looking at, you know, a fairly short recovery after something like that, especially when it comes to basketball. And that would be, you know, a good pathway to be on. That's probably the pathway he was on. On the flip side, if they were, you know, more aggressive with him, you know, let's say he had more of a higher grade injury to that rotator cuff, one in which would probably need to be sewed back together at some point, then the risk, of course, becomes, you know, making that worse in terms of tear size, in terms of, you know, giving it time to kind of pull away further from where it's supposed to be. Those kind of things could be detrimental to, you know, fixing this later on. And that would be kind of the issue I'd be worried about with him. Doubtful that was probably the case with him. You know, rotator cuff injuries, especially in young athletes, are really important things to address kind of right away, especially if it's significant enough that you think it might need to be sewed back together. Those are really things you have to be very, very careful about letting somebody play through that. Obviously, different story if it's more kind of a partial wear and tear. You don't think it really needs to be sewed back together. You can do some things to kind of nurse that along through the season, which, again, that kind of seems like what they were trying to do.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Kyrie Irving as he is out, shoulder issues with him. And we don't know exactly the procedure, but there are options out there. And Kyrie, first and foremost, slap me, because he's been in the league 9 years. That's almost a decade. Doesn't seem like it. But I do know he's been injury prone. He has missed 194 regular season games, and that's almost three seasons. So, from a mileage standpoint, he's missed some games. He goes all out, and he's great when he's on. Been difference making. He missed 26 of his 37 games at Duke, right? I remember when he was picked by Cleveland. So, what do you make of him if you're a medical expert? And a team comes to you about him all right, what are you going to get from Kyrie? You know they can go for 43 and break anybody off on the dribble, but you also know he could be sitting next to the trainer.
Yeah, he's a tough one. You know, obviously his injury history makes him, you know, kind of a volatile play just in terms of what do you do investing in him. Obviously, if you're looking at it from a management standpoint, he's somebody you'd think about a one-year contract kind of deal, not knowing kind of where he's going to end up. But that makes it tough when you have somebody as good as him that can really provide some significant, you know, value time, important time to kind of push into playoffs. But on the flip side, yeah, it makes it tough, you know, especially with his track record. Now you throw this on top of it again, and he definitely starts to limit, you know, some of his options going forward with teams. Obviously, they're going to really shy away from him. You know, again, you kind of rewind back and go to the injury he has now with the shoulder. You know, if this turns out to be a rotator cuff injury, it needs to be, you know, fixed or sewed back together. That also kind of hangs a sign up on him that puts him as kind of a difficult guy to sign after that. That's a tough thing to return from. Now, granted, it's basketball, and it's easier to return from a rotator cuff injury to basketball versus like a throwing event, but still, a significant enough injury in a, you know, still considering a young athlete like him to have a rotator cuff injury.
That's just it. I mean, he's not an old guy to have rotator cuff. So how does this happen? We got about a minute and a half here. How does a guy like Kyrie Irving end up getting shoulder issues?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing with these folks is just the amount of wear and tear in their bodies. And you think about how long they've been doing this, even though he hasn't been necessarily in the NBA that long, but you think about all the just incredible amount of club basketball, travel basketball, starting when he's a young kid, the wear and tear there with lifting weights, all the workout things that they're doing, strength and explosive things. So all that stuff really does weigh on your rotator cuff. Then you start adding in, you know, traumas that occur along the way, you know, the chance of, you know, falling on the shoulder or, you know, going up for a shot that gets blocked and somebody kind of jerks your arm to the back, all those kind of things. So you kind of look at wear and tear and, you know, trauma over time, and that's where you kind of get here. And this is probably a deal that's been kind of a wear and tear thing that's just gradually progressed to, you know, increasing tears in that cuff. And that's probably how he got here. It's very rare in our young athletes to have, you know, just kind of a total kind of rotator cuff tear that happens in one event. It does happen. I see them occasionally, but fortunately not very often.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. And we're talking Kyrie Irving and his shoulder issues and what's ahead for him. Dr. Brandon, thanks for a few minutes. Good to get caught up today.
All right, Chris, you guys take care.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time here on a Rail Yard Wednesday, Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Many thanks to Mike Schuhart and Rick Pizzo, Derek Peterson, Mike Babcock, and special thanks to Dan Napoli, writer and director for the documentary, 50 Summers. Be sure to check that out. Get it downloaded today, Amazon Prime or iTunes. A phenomenal story about minor league baseball, Omaha, the Royals, Storm Chasers, and the community connection. You will love it, man. Rob Riegel, is the narrator in this project, and it is just fantastic. Can't wait for you to see it. 466-377-6800-825-5865. The plan to be at Longwell's tomorrow, 4 to 6. Real Red tip-off ahead of Nebraska and Ohio State. That's an ESPN2 game. And we'll bring in our favorite fullback, Joel Makavica. Talk some Husker ball with Joel. Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity, and of course the Hall of Fame coach Jeff Smith will be with us. It's not a Thursday without Burke's Best Bets. Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago, will no doubt join us from the desert. Reminder about West Blue Realty: 2020 is the year for you to perhaps move. And West Blue Realty specializes in residential home sales in Lincoln and surrounding communities. Make this next move your best move with West Blue Realty. For a limited time, you mentioned Hail Varsity. West Blue Realty will provide up to $1,000 off the closing of your next home purchase. Tom Luby, give Tom a shout at 402-540-3768 or call Kelly Hofschneider. Kelly's awesome, along with Tom. Give Kelly a call at 402-202-2312. WestBlueRealty.com is where you log on. And if you have agricultural land you're looking to move, West Blue Realty can help with that. They can handle anything from live auctions to sealed bids to general land listings. They've sold land in different parts of Nebraska. They can help you if you're in Lancaster, Odo, Seward, or surrounding areas. Stop by when you're in town for the state tournament. West Blue Realty, find them, 1120 K Street, Suite 200. Elijah, what do you got going tonight?
I got an intramural basketball game here in about half an hour. I'm really excited for that. So I got to get this social media updated real quick after the show and make it out there. I know.
Well, do not half-ass it.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. My job is more important than an intramural basketball game. Plus, we got
Depends on who you're playing.
I don't know who's on this team, but we got Will Wilson coming in sub, and I know one of my teammates is going to be at work. So Will Wilson from Gregathan Hooks is going to come play with us.
How is Will from downtown?
much better than you'd expect. His ball handling isn't great. His defense is exceptional.
He's a spot-up guy.
His defense, he's a 3-and-D guy. He plays great defense, and he comes up the court, and he can drain a three.
He plays defense?
Oh, and he's good at it, too.
Is awesome.
He's so frustrating to go up against.
I bet. That is, I got to hear this report Friday.
Yeah, my team's 0-2 so far this year, though, so I'm hoping for a little better performance tonight.
See, our Able 4 team smoked too many Marlboro Reds, and let's just say we weren't an up-tempo squad.
You see, our problem so far this year has just been turning the ball over.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You're not a point guard, Elijah.
I'm not.
Get on the block.
My assist-to-turnover ratio is negative right now, I'm pretty sure.
All right. Find the podcast, HaleVarsity.com. Talk to you tomorrow. See ya.